This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 30th at 10:28 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like C-SPAN will air congressional hearings on delay so it can bleep out curse words. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who just love political theater. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the bar for Senate decorum drops even further, thanks to Ohio's senior senator. But first, our look at the campaign for governor this week runs from property taxes to the rights of transgender athletes to police union endorsements. We start with taxes. Next to rising gas prices and rising grocery prices, property taxes have loomed as the symbol of affordability in Ohio. Thanks to rising property values and voter-approved levies, property taxes have risen sharply in Ohio over the past few years, up 40% in some cases. State lawmakers have done a little to limit the increases. A ballot effort was there to abolish property taxes, but that stalled. And now candidates for governor are laying out their plans. Democrat Amy Acton has presented her plan to lower tax bills for some. Her plan calls for extending the homestead exemption, which helps low to moderate income seniors. She also proposes a rebate to low and moderate income Ohioans who see sharp increases in their property tax bills from one year to the next. Republican Vivek Ramaswamy has promised to reduce property taxes across the board to levels from before the end of the pandemic. Neither candidate has said how they would make up for the reduction in local tax revenue, which mainly pays for schools, police officers, and firefighters. Property tax relief is topic number one this week. Here to discuss it is the WOSU-TV Columbus on the Record panel, Sarah Donaldson, State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio, Maria Bruno, director of the group Ohioans Against Extremism, and Mark Weaver, Republican strategist. Sarah Donaldson, Acton's proposals are specific, but they're kind of modest. They're not going to have a whole lot of impact on most Ohioans.
Yes. So what she is proposing so far, it's not a huge overhaul of the current property tax system. And some of the proposals are maybe familiar to Ohioans who have been following this very closely and what the legislature has been talking about for some time, expanding the homestead exemption. She's also proposed something similar to a circuit breaker. So where your property taxes hit a certain point, there's kind of a cutoff. I'm not going to get too into the weeds because I haven't, broken down that proposal, but it's nothing earth-shattering.
It's still going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Based on Governor DeWine had proposed something similar, and the legislative analyst had looked at it. It's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars in local money, but how do you make that up?
Well, I think the reality is that the state has really disinvested from local communities. And ultimately, this is a race for the governor's office, which who will have a huge influence over how much money gets sent to the localities from the state itself. I think that could, be a potential avenue for making up that lost revenue. I'd, of course, also want to see the fine print, but to me, that seems like a good place to start.
Mark, hers are modest but more specific than Ramaswamy, who says, I'm just going to give the largest property tax cut in Ohio's history, but that's it.
Yeah, property tax owners have seen their taxes increase by somewhere between 40 and 50% since the pandemic. What Amy Acton is doing is picking winners and losers. Some property owners, she wants their vote, she's going to give them a tax increase. Vivek is saying it should be across the board, and he has offered a way to pay for it. He said he's going to have policies that will bring more growth, and when there's more revenue coming into the state, there's more money in the general fund, there's less need to put money into the local fund. So I think it's a smart plan. It ought to be for everybody. We're all in this together. Everybody should get a tax break.
Are these proposals going to be enough? I mean, I don't know how big this issue is going to be. It goes to the affordability issue in general. The property tax question is not on the ballot. It's not as urgent. Are these going to be enough, Sarah, these solutions?
I mean, it's tough to say. Lawmakers have been wrestling with this for some time, longer than these candidates have been like really actively campaigning. And of course, you know, the legislature did pass a couple of pieces of property tax legislation already. But, you know, there are also on the flip side, you know, concerns from the locals about what it all looks like. And if there are, you know, cuts to property taxes, how does that look at the local level?
No big picture reforms, you know, consolidating governments, changing how we fund. Now, Acton did say she wants to fix the school funding formula, but we've heard that for 30 years. No big reform proposals there.
Well, here's the thing. I think when it comes to school funding, they did try to fix it. They passed the Patterson-Cup Act, and then they stopped implementing it. And that formula was specifically designed to prevent what we're seeing now, which is these property tax spikes. And, you know, it's not really helped that we keep giving huge tax giveaways to big corporations. But, you know, I think that we know the answer because they've already worked through this question at the State House. We just stopped implementing the solution.
So without the abolishment question on the ballot this fall, it's still possibly going to be next year. Do candidates, Mark, do they avoid this? They just basically offer, okay, I have a plan. Mine's vaguely ambitious. Mine's a little more specific but modest. What do candidates do?
Here's what I find most interesting is that we know that there's a need for property tax relief. How do we know that? Because both candidates for governor are talking about property tax relief. In years past, the Republicans would say we need tax relief, and the Democrats would say, well, no, we don't. So the voice of the people have been heard. And at the school level, a lot of people are concerned that their school taxes continue to go up, but learning objectives have not advanced, particularly since the pandemic.
And levies keep passing.
Well, they keep passing, and also we've had literally over $1 billion go from public school funds to now private charter schools. So, I mean, it's not like they're working with even the same amount of resources.
Charter
that they
schools
have
are public schools, right? So there's not money.
Well,
going
they're
to
not held
schools,
to the same disclosure.
That's right, but they're distinctly public schools.
And there's also the private school vouchers, which is also $1 billion. But those are private schools.
And I will note that although levies do keep passing, there have been a slow number of failed levies and, you know, schools that have taken a different approach. They've tried maybe a local income tax increase. So, I mean, I think that is definitely a concern for schools, notably as well, when they're looking around and seeing some big school districts with failed levies.
2 years ago, transgender rights became a big issue in the campaigns for president and Senate and Congress. Bernie Marino and his supporters ran ad after ad accusing Sherrod Brown of being more for they, them, and not you. Democrats this year seem ready to try to blunt the issue after the Supreme Court decision upholding a ban on trans women competing in female sports. Amy Acton issued a statement to the Toledo Blade that said, quote, she does not approve of boys playing in girls' sports. That brought sharp criticism from transgender advocates, and Acton has since tried to clarify her support for LGBTQ rights. Maria Bruno, you and your organization were critical of Acton's first statement. Why so?
Well, you know, I think that it says a lot about a candidate by how they respond when they are subjected to criticism. We didn't like how she phrased it. I also am sympathetic to the fact that she is giving 20 hours of stump speeches each week. I mean, we're on this for 25 minutes, and I'm hoping not to put my foot in my mouth, so I sympathize. But, you know, when she was subjected to this criticism, she did two things. She, one, reaffirmed her support for LGBTQ community members and that she intends to defend their civil rights. And two, she reached out directly to LGBTQ leaders to have a longer conversation about how she can be an ally. That's an adult reacting to criticism that was legitimate and working through it with members of the Ohio community. And I think that we compare that to her opponent and the other option in this race, and we look at Vivek Ramaswamy, who launched his political career by doing a book tour about how he was the victim of wokeism. We have Donald Trump, who literally last week said that the CHIPS Act requires companies to hire transgender people, a complete fiction. And they're just, you know, lying about the transgender community. And
she still made a lot of trans people mad because she didn't support trans women playing on women's sports teams. But she's now in line with polls show, are 75% of Americans who have an issue with that.
I mean, I would argue the first thing she did is clarify that's not really what she meant. I also think the reality is that whether I like it or not, the anti-trans folks have won in this state. We already have banned gender-affirming care for youth. We already have transgender kids that are alienated in schools. We already have transgender kids not allowed to play school sports. So the fact that we're litigating this after in 2024, $200 million were spent by Republicans to specifically target trans people, I mean, it's very clear to me that it's coming up because it is a campaign time. It's the issue they like to talk about, but it's not the one Ohio voters are thinking about.
Will we be talking about it this cycle, Mark, as we did last cycle? It was $38 million or something like that that Marty Marino's supporters did on trans ads. It doesn't seem like it's that big an issue, and she kind of has, intentionally or not, put herself with more mainstream opinions on this issue.
Yeah, I think she did it clumsily. She's trying to appeal to the large swath of people who believe that boys should not be, girls should not be playing in boys' sports and vice versa. But what she didn't say was that she wouldn't stop that 19-year-old high school senior male who mistakenly thinks he's a female from showering next to that 14-and-a-half-year-old freshman girl in the locker room. She didn't go that far. And any parent of a daughter will tell you that it's absurd that a fully intact male ought to be showering in a high school locker room next to a 14-and-a-half-year-old girl.
I don't think that's happening in locker rooms in Ohio.
Well, sure it is. I mean, if you allow girls...
There are 7 trans athletes competing in high school sports out of 400,000 athletes in high school.
Those numbers are disputed heavily, and we know it's become
15,
a social
20?
Contagion that some men mistakenly think that they're women. They deserve our compassion. They deserve counseling, but they don't deserve to shower next to a young girl who's already embarrassed by having to shower in front of other women, young women.
I have personally known several families of trans youth that have had to leave the state because the environment is so hostile to their kid just being left alone. I used to sit next to a high schooler that was doing their math homework while they waited to testify about why they should play school sports. This is an attack on a specific small group of people that are already subjected to a ton of bullying and other consequences. And I just think it is so crazy that even when the Republicans get everything they want, they cannot help themselves but focus on this issue.
So where does this play in this campaign, Sarah? We talked about property taxes, affordability being the main issue. We've seen a little bit of ads of, you know, trying to paint people as too far left. I don't see the trans ads showing up as much this part in the campaign anyway.
Well, quite frankly, both candidates can say whatever they want about it, but it's a settled issue in Ohio. I mean, there is a ban on trans kids in youth sports in Ohio. The Supreme Court has upheld that states can do that. So it's really...
They can all play sports, though. They just have to play sports aligned with their sex.
But
every one of them can play sports. The notion that they're banned from sports is just not true.
It's a settled issue in that regard. And so I think that Amy Acton, if she were to win the governor's race, the legislature is going to have very similar demographics and this legislature. So I think it's an issue that, of course, you know, it is election time. It's been an issue that's been salient for several years, but it's a settled issue in Ohio.
Okay. Let's get to our last topic, our next topic, rather. Ohio's largest police union has issued its endorsement for this fall's election, and they all go to Republicans. It's part of a recent trend. Police union endorsements used to be more bipartisan. The Ohio Fraternal Order of Police has endorsed Sherrod Brown in the past. It endorsed Democrat Richard Cordray over Mike DeWine for governor 8 years ago. Mark Weaver, again, it's not a huge story, but the fact that they was a complete sweep, all Republicans, a bit of a surprise for the Ohio FOP. You work with the police union. What do you think is going on?
Thank you. Full disclosure, I'm a member of the FOP as a prosecutor, and I also advise the state FOP. You're right. They have endorsed in both Republican and Democrats, but they also have clear eyes about they need to work with the policymakers who support police. For years, Democrats were willing to come over and talk about supporting police, but their party is so captured by the far left defund the police movement that nearly every rank and file police officer knows which party is standing behind the work that he or she does.
Now, Sherrod Brown, I think there's a nuance in the defund. If some on the far left are defund the police, but most Democrats, I think, are kind of, you know, in the middle, more oversight. But all Democrats get lumped in with that defund the police call, and that's hurting them, right?
I mean, I think right now we are all seeing with our own eyes what it looks like when the federal government oversteps its authority and subjects citizens to arrest and even imprisonment without having any cause. So I think that the salient issue for the Democratic base is the fact that we really care about a limited government and everyone having the right to be free from, you know, persecution, essentially. So I just kind of think that, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise. I also think that endorsements just have come to not mean as much. I mean, we saw the Ohio Republican Party endorsed Ramaswamy, and most of their base didn't like that because they wanted the option themselves. I think that what we're seeing is these endorsements, no one wants to be told who to vote for. They're just going to pick which person they trust. So, you know, it's no surprise, but I don't think it'll matter that much.
Doesn't stop candidates from doing ads with sheriff's deputies and police officers, right?
No,
regardless of the endorsement?
Of course not. And this was, of course, an issue in prior campaigns. The writing was kind of on the walls because I believe the FOP declined to endorse in the race between Moreno and Brown.
They stayed neutral, yeah.
And the rank and file folks, I heard, were more leaning toward wanting to endorse Moreno. So I'm not shocked that this endorsement came out for Husted. And I do think, as someone who's spoken to a lot of law enforcement, just because I work in a building that has a lot of law enforcement, and also I live in a city, there are certainly, regardless of what a candidate has said, there are some wounds on that side about how 2020 played out.
Speaking of wounds, Keith Faber, when he was a state senator, led the campaign for Senate Bill 5 and fought the repeal of it, which would have taken away a lot of bargaining rights of the police union. Did the members forget that, or they moved beyond that? What's going
on? Full disclosure, I'm an advisor to Keith Faber, so everybody knows.
He's running for attorney general.
He's running for attorney general. Yeah. I think Keith would tell you that at the time he would have loved to carve out police and fire from that, but John Kasich insisted on police and fire being in Senate Bill 5. But if you talk to rank and file police officers who know Keith Faber, they know that he's strong law enforcement. He's strong for what police are trying to do. It was no surprise to me that he got the endorsement.
Like newspaper endorsements, I question the value of union endorsements these days. They mean something, but no longer do voters just listen to their union bosses or to their local newspaper publishers. Thanks to the Columbus on the Record panel, Republican strategist Mark Weaver, Maria Bruno of the group Ohioans Against Extremism, and State House reporter Sarah Donaldson from Ohio Public Radio. Coming up after the break, our Snollygoster of the Week segment, but first we want to ask a favor. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you are using to hear us. And don't forget to follow that, to tap that follow button so you can get every episode. We'll be right back. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. For the second week in a row, we give it to Senator Bernie Moreno, Ohio's senior U.S. Senator, a member of the world's greatest deliberative body, who had this question for Dr. Anthony Fauci, who once led the nation's COVID-19 response. It came at a nationally televised hearing of the U.S. Senate. Now, before we run this unedited clip, a warning. Moreno uses an F word. It's not Fauci or Fifth, as in amendment.
It was about 6 years ago today that I decided I'm going to give up my businesses, sell them all, run for office, run for the United States Senate. Here I am sitting in front of you 6 years later saying, who the fuck do you think you were for doing that? It is a total disgrace what you did to this country.
You know, there's not much more to say, but it got headlines. It went kind of viral. It certainly pleased the far right of his political base. Will it hurt Bernie Moreno politically in a statewide race? Well, he won't be tested for 4 more years. Certainly, though, it's worthy of our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.